You're listening to Book Insights, brought to you by Memode, finding and simplifying the world's most powerful ideas to fit into your lifestyle. Each episode is a deep dive into a nonfiction bestseller that can change your life or make you think. In around 30 minutes, you'll learn all about a book that offers wisdom for your life, career, or business. So get ready to live and work smarter, better, and happier with Book Insights.
How to Win Friends and Influence People is arguably the most influential self-help book of all time. It's an ode to integrity and good humor in the name of healthy capitalism, with a touchstone of American self-improvement. It's said that the only diploma hanging in Warren Buffett's office is his certificate from Dale Carnegie's training course. How to Win Friends was first published by Simon & Schuster in 1936, after Leon Shimkin, a publisher at Simon & Schuster, attended one of Carnegie's 14-week courses. He then persuaded Carnegie to have a stenographer record notes. How to Win Friends hit the ground running, going through 17 editions in its first year alone. It's estimated that it sold a monumental 30 million copies. In this Book Insight, we'll explore the following three key takeaways from How to Win Friends and Influence People. 1. What would Lincoln do? The fundamentals of dealing with people and 6 ways to get them to like you. 2. The age of influence. How to get people thinking your way. 3. Lead like Carnegie. How to be a great leader and a great friend. We'll conclude by taking a look at the wider impact that Carnegie and his works have had, as well as any potential criticisms. One of Carnegie's great influences was Abraham Lincoln. He studied Lincoln's life for 10 years and spent 3 writing and rewriting a book, Lincoln the Unknown. In How to Win Friends, Carnegie regularly references Lincoln, quoting Lincoln's Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, that Lincoln was the most perfect ruler of men that the world has ever seen. If he found himself in a difficult situation, Carnegie would ask, "What would Lincoln do?" One of the key features of Lincoln's character was that he'd never criticize. Lincoln's favorite quotation was, "Judge not that ye be not judged." He realized how when we deal with people, we must remember that we're all driven by fears, prejudices, and vanities. Given the same set of circumstances, you may act just as your enemy does. You too might be rude or dismissive or angry if you lived someone else's life. It's a simple lesson in empathy. A more recent example is found in David Foster Wallace's deeply moving commencement address at Kenyon College in 2005. Wallace believed that we're hardwired to view life through a lens of self. Imagine you're in a rush to get home from work, and you find yourself stuck in a supermarket queue behind someone who's loading up with junk food. Their screaming children are out of control and all over the place. We tut-tut and roll our eyes, thinking, well, maybe the kids would be better behaved if they weren't fed so many sweets. What we don't know is that actually this person in front of us has a partner who's in the hospital with a terminal illness, and that junk food is the quickest thing to feed the children prior to rushing to the hospital before visiting hours end. You just don't know. For Carnegie, instead of condemning people, let's try to understand them. Let's try to figure out why they do what they do. It's Carnegie's first principle. Don't judge, don't criticize, and don't blame. We must remember that the only way to get someone to do something is to make them want to do it. And to achieve this, we need to understand what motivates people. Carnegie cites Freud's view that everything comes down to 2 desires: sex and the desire to be great. With that in mind, the most effective way to deal with people in a way that will be most advantageous to you is to praise and appreciate them. Shift the focus away from yourself and your wants to the other person. Here is Ira Glass on Carnegie.
He says, I often went fishing up in Maine during the summer. Personally, I am very fond of strawberries and cream, but I have found that for some strange reason, fish prefer worms. So when I went fishing, I didn't think about what I wanted. I thought about what they wanted. I didn't bait the hook with strawberries and cream. Rather, I dangled a worm or a grasshopper in front of the fish and said, "Wouldn't you like to have that?" Why not use the same common sense when fishing for people?
Carnegie provides 6 ways to get people to like you. First, be genuinely interested in other people. Carnegie recalls his first best friend, Tippy. Tippy was a yellow-haired pup bought for 50 cents. Tippi's love for Carnegie was boundless and unconditional and came with no ulterior motives. He just gave. He was always excited to see young Dale. The lesson? We can make more friends in 2 months by becoming genuinely interested in other people than by spending a decade attempting to get them interested in you. Carnegie's second bit of advice is blissfully simple. Smile. Needless to say, a dead-behind-the-eyes pseudo-grin won't have the desired effect. And if you don't feel like smiling, follow the psychologist William James's advice and try whistling a happy and uplifting tune. James believed that by regulating the action, we can indirectly regulate the feeling. Carnegie's third way to get people to like you is remember people's names. Again, deceptively straightforward and easier said than done. Carnegie notes the time he interviewed Jim Farley, the man responsible for getting Franklin D. Roosevelt into office. Farley said that the key to his success was his ability to call 50,000 people by their first names. By and large, people love their own names. Carnegie doesn't offer much by way of advice as to how exactly to remember 50,000 names, but he does cite Napoleon III's method. Nephew to Napoleon Bonaparte and the first elected president of France, Napoleon supposedly had the following practice for memorizing names. If you don't hear a person's name clearly the first time, ask them to repeat it. If it's a name that you haven't heard before, ask them to spell it. And throughout your first conversation with them, repeat their name as much as is possible. Each time you use their name, notice something about their appearance. Is their hair curly? Do they wear glasses? And fix it in your mind. Carnegie's fourth tip links back to his first. Be interested in other people and encourage them to talk about themselves. The two things go hand in hand. Naturally, one of the most direct ways to show interest in another person is to ask them questions and to get them talking. The rapt attention of someone else is one of the most irresistible forms of flattery. The key to being a good conversationalist, Carnegie says, is to be a good listener. To be interesting, be interested. Carnegie's fifth way to get people to like you is, again, pretty simple and similar to the fourth. Talk to others about what interests them. You might love baseball, but if you eulogize the sport to someone who has never watched a game, you aren't likely to endear yourself to that person. His sixth and final piece of advice is to make other people feel important. Carnegie illustrates his point with a charming anecdote. Someone from his course, a Mr. R, is in Long Island visiting relatives. He finds himself engaged in conversation with his wife's elderly aunt. She's widowed and lives alone in the beautiful house that she built with her husband in 1890. Mr. R agrees to a tour of the house with the great aunt. She shows off her china, the French beds and Italian paintings, treasures that she collected while traveling the world. Mr. R sincerely admires her home and tells her, truthfully, that he thinks it's beautiful. They don't build houses like this anymore. The last thing she shows him is a mint-condition Packard car, a gift from her husband. To Mr. R's surprise, she turns around and offers him the car, saying, "You appreciate nice things." The story might sound unlikely, but dig into Mr. R's attitude towards the lady, and her gift starts to make sense. She was living alone in a home she built with her husband, surrounded by memories and precious items from her youth. She was in the isolated loneliness of old age. All she craved was human warmth and a little recognition, which she got from Mr. R. Like a spring in the desert, as Carnegie puts it. Her gratitude overwhelmed her. Carnegie quotes former UK Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli, "Talk to people about themselves and they will listen for hours." In this part, we learned Dale Carnegie's six ways to make people like you instantly. They are 1. Be genuinely interested in other people. 2. Smile. 3. Remember people's names. 4. Encourage people to talk about themselves. 5. Talk to others about what interests them. 6. Make other people feel important. Next time, we'll continue our discussion on how to win friends and influence people. We'll look into the age of influence and how to get people to think your way.
Enjoying this episode of Book Insights? If so, keep listening and learning. There's a collection of over 100 titles you can read or listen to now at memoedapp.com/insights. That's memodapp.com/insights.
The power to persuade others is an essential tool in anyone's arsenal and a key to interpersonal success. In this part, we'll continue our dive into Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. We'll look at what Carnegie has to say on persuasion. We'll learn about the age of influence and how to get people to think your way. Carnegie's first piece of advice is to avoid arguments at any cost. He recalls working as the manager for Sir Ross Smith, an Australian aviator who gained a worldwide reputation as a pilot in the First World War. At a banquet held in Smith's honor, the man sitting next to Carnegie was telling a story that hinged on the quote, "There's a divinity that shapes our ends, rough-hew them how we will." He mentioned that it was from the Bible. Carnegie interjected to say that it was actually a quote from Shakespeare's Hamlet. Another colleague later admonished Carnegie for correcting the gentleman, saying, "Why prove to a man he is wrong? Is that going to make him like you?" In other words, if you want to avoid an argument, don't start one. If you do find yourself in a situation where a disagreement has arisen, the one thing to remember is to never say to someone else, "You're wrong." Diplomacy is key, especially if you strongly disagree with the other person. Dr. Martin Luther King was once asked how, as a pacifist, he could admire General Daniel James Jr., the first African American to reach the 4-star rank in the armed forces. King's answer was simple: "I judge people by their own principles, not by my own." Here's social psychologist and NYU professor of ethical leadership, Jonathan Haidt, during a TED Talk.
Read Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Seriously, I'm totally serious. You'll learn techniques. If you start by acknowledging, if you start by saying, "You know, we don't agree on a lot, but one thing I really respect about you, Uncle Bob, or about you conservatives, whatever it is, you know," and you can find something. So if you start with some appreciation, it's like magic.
If you're wrong, always be the first to admit it and never wait to be called out. As Carnegie explains, any fool can defend their own mistakes, and more often than not, fools do. It's also crucial to admit the wrong with sincerity. Take, for instance, Roseanne Barr, who after posting a racist tweet about Valerie Jarrett, claimed she was Ambien tweeting. The drug Ambien's manufacturer, Sanofi, promptly released a statement confirming what everyone already knew. Racism is not a known side effect of any Sanofi medication. Needless to say, Barr's knee-jerk apology did not win her any friends. Aside from never saying, "You're wrong," and always quickly and emphatically admitting your own mistakes, what else does Carnegie advise we do to influence others? Again, he takes a tip from Lincoln, specifically Lincoln's famous quote, "A drop of honey gathers more flies than a gallon of gall." This might seem obvious, but think of the number of times that your actions could have had a more satisfactory outcome had you played the situation with Lincoln's quote in mind. Carnegie's advice harks back to one of Aristotle's three ways to persuade people, which he sets out in Rhetoric. Appeal to the emotional side of someone and try to evoke feelings of sympathy in them. It's the fastest way to get them on your side. Another way to get people thinking your way is to emphasize common ground. It's crucial to get people agreeing with you as soon as possible. For Carnegie, this is the power of saying yes. He cites a study from Influencing Human Behavior, a 1925 book by Professor Harry Overstreet, which said that a yes answer at the outset sets the psychological process of the listener moving in the affirmative direction. A no answer causes the body to enter a condition of rejection. Saying yes aloud is an exclamation, a release both emotional, neurological, and muscular. No, on the other hand, is inherently a restrictive action. This is true regardless of what language you're speaking. It's such a powerful means of persuasion that Socrates used it. Getting a yes response is often called the Socratic method. Perhaps the key way to persuade people and get them on your side is to make them think that any idea that they have is theirs. This makes total sense. People have more faith in an idea if they believe that they've come to it themselves. Try subtly planting an idea in someone's mind and then nurture it just enough that it starts to grow. But don't then try and take back ownership of that idea. It may win you instant credit, but in the long run, your reputation will take a more lasting hit. For Carnegie, it's all about getting into the mindset of the other person. If you can see things from another person's point of view, that's a formula that will work wonders for you. It's very rare that people will be wrong and at the same time think they're wrong. Even rarer is if they know that they're wrong and still cling on to an idea or remark. The likely scenario is that the other person believes they're right, in which case you'll never succeed by pointing out to them that they're wrong. And if they think they're wrong, there's even less reason to try to convince them otherwise, because they already know that they're wrong. You're better off trying to work out exactly why they hold that belief. It always comes back to Carnegie's first principle. Be like Lincoln and let empathy drive your every action. Carnegie's final two pieces of advice on how to win people round to your way of thinking are to dramatize, and if in doubt, throw down a challenge. Telling a story is a reliable way to persuade people and is another technique which Carnegie borrows from Aristotle. If you can create a narrative around your idea or argument, then you're more likely to capture their imagination and appeal to the acquiescing side of their nature. It's exactly why and how advertising works as it does. In fact, it's one of the key ideas in Contagious, Why Things Catch On by Jonah Berger, which won the American Marketing Association's Book of the Year Prize in 2014. Tell a story, or rather, wrap the product that you're trying to sell within a story, and you're guaranteed to get people's attention. If telling a story fails, you can always turn it into a game. By turning a situation into a competition, you appeal to what Carnegie believes everyone wants, a chance to prove themselves, a chance to excel, and above all, the chance to win. In this part, we explored how to influence people. The key factors for Carnegie are to avoid arguments, never say you're wrong, and be the first to admit it about yourself, and to use a drop of honey instead of gall. Always emphasize the common ground between yourself and others, and get the other person to say yes as early as possible. Help them to believe that the idea is theirs, and always tell a story. Finally, throw the gauntlet down and turn a problematic situation into a challenge. Next time, we'll conclude our dive into Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. We'll learn how to lead like Carnegie and summarize with a brief review.
Enjoying this episode of Book Insights? If so, keep listening and learning. There's a collection of over 100 titles you can read or listen to now at memodapp.com/insights. That's memodapp.com/insights.
Perhaps one of the trickiest balances to strike in life is between leader and friend. Businesses depend on ambitious employees, and more often than not, people are driven in their work. Most people wish to move forward and progress in their careers, even if they aren't in the career that they ultimately want to be in. You're unlikely to find many people on an office floor who are quite happy to coast along, never challenging themselves and never developing. And at some stage, ambition is likely to engender a certain level of responsibility and possibly a leadership role. How do you bridge that gap between friend and peer to leader? How do you go from trusted confidant to delivering criticism? Whether or not you stay in the same team, it's a difficult step to make. In this part, we're concluding this book insight into Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. We'll look into Carnegie's leadership style and wrap up with the impact and criticisms of Carnegie's work. For Carnegie, the best way to navigate balance of leader and friend is to first remember his fundamental technique of never judge and condemn, but always be guided by empathy. Here is Frances Fry, Harvard professor and former senior vice president at Uber, during her TED Talk.
I'll give you an illustration of empathy. In the meetings at Uber, it was not uncommon for people to be texting one another about the meeting. It may have done many things, but it did not create a safe, empathetic environment. The solution, though, super clear. Technology off and away. And that forced people to look up, to look at the people in front of them, to listen to them, to immerse themselves in their perspectives, and to collaborate in unprecedented ways.
When you give feedback on a mistake that a person has made, it's best to do so in a roundabout way. Humans are remarkably perceptive and will almost always pick up on the criticism that is being made, even if it isn't actually about them. Similarly, Carnegie believes it's best to pose a suggestion of improvement as a question rather than an order. This can work wonders. It's also key to emphasize your own mistakes. Doing so will always put the other person at ease. This also works in a group context, for example, a monthly cross-team discussion about any mistakes or issues that have occurred. Far from being an exercise in inputting blame, it's an opportunity for people to share what they've learned. It will underscore that problems are always an opportunity for growth. We're all human, and everyone makes mistakes. It's important to hold our hands up and accept that. It's one of Carnegie's core tenets. Who would you rather go to with a problem or admit a mistake to? A seemingly omnipotent boss who has never put a foot wrong? Or an empathetic manager who's been in a very similar situation themselves? It doesn't do anyone any good to be an ostrich with your head in the sand. Another vitally important principle is to let the other person save face. Nothing good ever came from making another person feel unworthy, unappreciated, or incompetent. Carnegie cites the French aviation legend Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. "I have no right to say or do anything that diminishes a man in his own eyes. What matters is not what I think of him, but what he thinks of himself." In this book insight, we broke down the essential takeaways from Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. First, we looked at Carnegie's 6 ways to get people to like you. Be genuinely interested in other people. Smile. Remember their name. Listen and ask questions. Talk to people about what interests them and make other people feel important. Second, we learned how to influence people. Avoid arguments. Never say you're wrong and be the first to admit it if you are. Use consideration over force. Emphasize the common ground. Get the other person to say yes. Help them to believe the idea is theirs. Always tell a story. Turn a problematic situation into a challenge. Lastly, guide your actions through empathy. One criticism often made of Carnegie and How to Win Friends is that it's essentially a book of common sense that is, at times, excruciatingly obvious. How to get ahead? Well, start by calling people their actual name and not Bob. But perhaps this is simply a sign of how much we have incorporated Carnegie's advice. It is obvious, but it wasn't always. Writing a book about relationships and the necessity of emotional intelligence in the workplace was far from obvious in 1936. It was radical. Although Carnegie had benevolent intentions for his courses and books, it's not too far a leap to see why some people took his advice to a much darker place. Tellingly, the title is Win Friends, not Find or Make Them. The capitalist spirit is alive and well in Carnegie. Arguably, the end goal of Carnegie's advice is entirely self-serving. Everything is framed in terms of what there is to gain personally. Don't be kind to someone to give them confidence. Use that drop of honey to make sure they listen to you. And don't forget that smile will bring a good price in the marketplace. It's easy to see why, along with the great and good, Carnegie and How to Win Friends and Influence People have also inspired a long list of contentious and outright criminal people, from Donald Trump to Charles Manson. In his biography of Manson, Jeff Gwynne credits Carnegie's teachings with turning Manson from a low-level pimp to a frighteningly effective sociopath. Criticisms aside, How to Win Friends and Influence People has a rare, enduring popularity. The book has been reissued countless times. It is in scores of languages and has been spun off in titles such as How to Win Friends and Influence People in the Digital Age and How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. Whatever your views on Carnegie, his legacy is beyond doubt. Lowell Thomas, the writer, actor, and broadcaster who's credited with creating the Lawrence of Arabia legend, wrote that Carnegie created one of the most significant movements in adult education. People still flock to Dale Carnegie courses and still feel that they've been transformed, much like Warren Buffett did. From an early age, Buffett always seemed to know how to make money, but had no idea how to deal with people. Before the course, he was an introvert with rough edges. After, he became the amusing, generous, avuncular figure we know today. Carnegie's advice is dead simple, but when applied, extremely powerful.
Thank you for listening to Book Insights. Check out the rest of our content at memo.app.com. Please keep in mind that the information provided in or through our Book Insights episodes is for educational and informational purposes only. It's not intended to be a substitute for advice given by qualified professionals and should not be relied upon to disregard or delay seeking professional advice.